Pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate, you're listening to news, views and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Welcome back, dear listener. We're up to episode 49 of the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. With me, of course, is the Velvet Glove. How are you, Scott?
I'm very well, thanks, Trevor. How's yourself?
I'm very well. Episode 49, Scott. We're getting close to a milestone here.
We are getting close to a milestone. In 3 weeks' time, we will have been going for 52 weeks, which is a year. Mm. Well, we would have been going for 54 weeks, but we had that 2 weeks off over Christmas. But
I think we'll have to do a special episode on our 1 year anniversary. I was thinking, as a special treat for the listener, I might tell the story of my baptism into the Roman Catholic Church. Because believe it or not, dear listener, I can remember it. So so if you stay with us until a special episode, you'll get the Iron Fist baptism story.
That sounds good. That sounds something good to look forward to.
Can you? Well, hang on. Now, what were you? You were in an Anglican type thing. What was it
again? No, Presbyterian.
Do they have baptisms?
Yeah, they do. And they are done as children, babies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Normally Catholics are as well, but my case, of course, was unusual.
Yes.
All right. Scott, since we last spoke, we mentioned that the order of the candidates on the Senate ballot ticket was going to be drawn. It has been drawn since our last one.
And it was drawn last Friday.
Mm. For those who don't know, there were 39 separate sort of groups, names go into a hat, and an officer who was blindfolded from the Australian Electoral Commission sort of reaches into a hat or a bucket and starts pulling out names. So out of 39, Scott, where did we come?
We came number 3.
Pretty damn good result, I think.
It was a pretty damn good result, so, we're not too far from the coveted donkey vote position, so we've done pretty well.
Mm. We're going to miss out on the Arabic reading right-to-left donkey vote that we picked up. We're going to miss out on that one.
Yes, that we are. That we are. In New South Wales, there was discussion around that because the Health Party got to number one, and that bumped out the Liberal Democrats, who were in the number one position last time round. And Lionhelm is credited with his victory in the last Senate election because of his position in the ballot paper.
Yes, he was number one, and he had what seemed a bit of a misleading name, calling himself Liberal Democrat, so people just saw Liberal and, well, possibly just saw Liberal and not Liberal Democrat and didn't know the difference.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. I mean, I think that was probably the bigger thing rather than the position in the ballot paper, but still in all it worked.
But interestingly, Scott, perhaps his name isn't as misleading as this year's number one position holder, because the Health Party this year in New South Wales got number one position.
And, yes.
And they're not a health party at all.
No, they're not. They're anti-vaxxers, aren't they?
Yes. So they're into sort of pseudoscience and naturopathy and all that sort of stuff, and they don't want it to be mandatory. Well, there's an article that we'll link to from the Sydney Morning Herald. They've got a preoccupation with homeopathy, home birthing and conspiracy theories about medical research.
It's crazy when you actually look into it. It's, you've got a situation where the lead Senate candidate in New South Wales said that we are not anti-vaccination. We are opposed to coercion requiring people to be vaccinated or medicated without their informed consent. Mm. I mean, how much more informed do you need to be about something simple like vaccination?
Mm. So this is the Health Australia Party. Apparently they're also opposed to fluoride in public water, and they support chiropractic treatment of infants with colic.
Oh, yeah, dear. I mean, like, back crackers and that sort of stuff might be okay for
Backcrackers.
For adults, but not children.
And in Victoria, the lead candidate described himself as a world authority on homeopathic immunisation and claims it can be 90% effective against epidemic infectious diseases. Crikey. And this...
Yeah,
Health Australia Party.
I know. They really should just be calling themselves the Anti-Vaxxer Party, really, shouldn't they?
Mm. They were previously called the Natural Medicine Party when it was created in 2013, but the president thinks that the new name better reflects the party's broad policy brief. Goodness me.
Yeah, I mean, opposing fluoride in public water supply, that's just really out there thinking, It's madness, really.
So for our New South Wales listeners, when you're going through the Senate ballot, you've got to go down a long way for the secular party. We're somewhere in the middle there. But for goodness sake, don't put the health party anywhere on your horizon, because they sound
even if you are voting more than one candidate above the line, make sure it's not them.
Just a few little bits and pieces of trivia and political news. Like at home, if you're playing the drinking game, the ACL, they contacted me, Scott.
Yes, I got the same email.
I got a phone call. So,
did you?
Yes, I got a phone call from a guy who said he was from the Australian Christian Lobby in the ACT, I felt like Luke Skywalker getting a phone call from Darth Vader. That's how it felt to me, Scott. It was just like, ooh, gosh. And anyway, they were having a candidate forum in the ACT and wanted to know whether our ACT Senate candidates would like to turn up. So I simply forwarded the information to our ACT Senate candidates and said... well, if you enjoy being booed, you could probably go along if that seems like good sport to you. But otherwise, you're probably wasting your time. So don't know if they're going to attend. But then since that, Scott, you would have got the email, I guess, that I'm about to talk about from Wendy... What's her name? Francis, whatever.
Wendy Francis, yes. I got that... Today, I believe it was.
Yeah. So the ACL in Queensland is running Meet Your Candidate forums around the state, and they've invited us to attend. The only problem is that it's only House of Reps candidates who will get to speak for 5 minutes, but as a Senate candidate, we would be introduced and then we'd be allowed to stand down the back and talk to people who approached us afterwards and hand out flyers if we wished. And
are you going to go?
Do you know what? If it was around the corner, I probably would, just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
But the addresses they've listed are just not handy. Sunnybank, Birktail, Murrumba Downs, Beenleigh, Budrum, Caloundra, they're all Baptist church venues, and they're just too far, even for a bit of sport and fun like that. If it was only a 20-minute drive somewhere, I might, but why, are you going to?
I wasn't planning on it.
No. It could provide good material for the podcast, Scott.
It could do, that's true, yes. Mm.
So that's our ACL news, and also... you might notice on our website and Facebook we have shown pictures of Scott and I wearing our secular party caps, and I've now got a link on our website. If you'd like to buy a cap, you can buy a cap from us. I think I've got them listed as $10 each and a flat fee postage of $11. So if you'd like a secular party cap, hop onto our website and buy one, two, or as many as you like. So that's there. Proceeds, profits going to the secular party. There we go.
Yeah.
Still on election stuff. We've got a link. Anthony Green, the ABC election analyst, just sort of did a bit of number crunching on how many candidates there are and how it's increased since last federal election. And in Queensland, at the last Senate election, there were 82 candidates. If you thought that was long, well, there's now 122 candidates. So there's a lot of us.
There's a hell of a lot of us, isn't there? Mm. Yeah.
Interestingly, in that sort of random ballot drawer I was talking about, we got the third column, Labor got the fourth, LNP the seventh column, Katter's Australia Party got column 9, Pauline Hanson got column 24, Glenn Lazarus is 29, and the Greens way down at 37. So,
really? I didn't realise the Greens got kicked so far off to the right.
Yeah, long way down in that one. So, so anyway, there's a link to that, but a lot more Senate candidates than last time. And
absolutely.
Oh, and one other email I got. What happens is after, Scott, we put, in the 3 hours that we spent at the Australian Electoral Commission, we both put our email addresses on a form and ticked the box to say that we were happy to be contacted. And I subsequently got an email today from Firearm Owners United. And
really? I didn't get that email.
Yeah. Actually, maybe I got that one because... spokesperson. Oh, actually, I did. Yeah. I got that one as a spokesperson at the Secular Party. And basically looking, I think, for help from other parties, I think. And, gee, their timing's bad, you know.
If you're... Well, considering what's actually just happened in the last 48 hours, yeah, their timing's really bad.
Exactly. So, yeah, 49 people slaughtered in New Orleans and...
in Orlando,
yes, and they're running an election program seeking to make guns more available, and talking about an automatic weapon that should be allowed. So,
yeah.
good luck to the to them on that one. Scott, well, we should talk about the Orlando shooting.
Yes, we should.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's a hell of a bloody thing that's happened, that's for sure. And the guys and girls that were shot were just out enjoying themselves.
Mm.
And a madman comes bursts into the scene and opens fire on them. Mm. It really is, I don't want to sound melodramatic, but it is quite distressing. Mm. Because... you know, myself and the better half, we've been out to gay nightclubs and that sort of stuff before. And the thing that I have always... the thing that I've always found about gay nightclubs is that you do feel like you're at home, as it were.
Mm.
You do feel like you've got a place where you can go and that sort of stuff and no one's going to judge you or anything like that.
Mm.
But then to have this madman come in there and kill 49 people... It is awful. It's there's very little other to say about that. Other than it is awful, and yeah, that's about where I've got to, I'm afraid.
The reports seem to be suggesting that he'd actually attended that nightclub on many occasions and seemed to have a bit of a history of wanting to strike up gay relationships.
That wouldn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. It really wouldn't surprise me that there was possibly a fair amount of self-loathing in himself when he went there and shot people.
Yes. Well, that's my view, would be that he's a Muslim guy and he's got, you know, he's got these feelings where he's wanting to have a gay experience and the two don't go together. Like, he's been indoctrinated since birth that... homosexuality is a no-no and, you know, you just can't do it and be a good Muslim. And yet, on the other hand, he's probably got these urges that are just urges that he's got and he can't control, in the sense he wants to have... he's interested in the gay relationship. So yeah, that and a few other things, and frustration, and add to that all sorts of other things going on in his head, no doubt. But you can just see that, once again, religion's got some involvement in that.
Yeah, I mean, religion has got some involvement in it for sure, and it is, it's the Islamic faith. It's, it's got a hell of a lot to answer for it. And, there was a number of things that came up on the various atheist feeds and all that sort of stuff that I subscribed to on Facebook. And there were a number of people that said, hang on a minute, you can't just label this guy because of his religion. And I thought to myself, well, actually, you can.
Yes.
Yes. And I think you must. It is crazy for anyone who... there's the report of him calling 911 beforehand and declaring his allegiance towards the Islamic State.
Yep.
That's first off the mark, saying he's a Muslim.
Yes.
The second thing is he was obviously raised a Muslim.
Yes.
Even though he was born in the United States and that sort of stuff. And then, went out, bought a firearm and went mad with it. It's crazy that anyone would think anything other than... Islamic terrorist. I have read there is some stuff that said not all mass shootings are terrorism, are acts of terrorism. That is true. But this one, I think you can put it down to being an act of terrorism because of where the guy's come from and what he's allegedly done with 911 beforehand.
I'd put it down as a bit of both, a few things. The torment of being Muslim and wanting to be gay, and then I think also he's no doubt a loner sort of guy and not feeling accepted, and throw into that, if I'm going to shoot people, I might as well hang my hat on a bit of an ISIS type thing as well. So it could be a whole combination of things going on there.
I don't think it's just one thing and not the other. I mean, it is probably a combination of things. But when I'd read that he'd been to the nightclub on numerous occasions before, I just thought to myself, "Nah, that sounds like a fair amount of self-loathing there."
Talk about the Christian community sort of saying, "Oh, our thoughts and prayers for the." For the LGBT victims in the nightclub. Yeah. And,
John Birmingham said it beautifully, didn't he? Orlando shooting, thoughts and prayers from hypocrites do nothing to help.
And partly to blame, the religious right in Christianity does plenty of demonising of homosexuals in our community. So it's not like they're guilt-free in... they're condoning poor treatment of homosexuals a lot of the time, so they can. It's so hypocritical to come out and say, "Oh, I feel really sorry for the LGBT community." Meanwhile, you've been slamming them at every opportunity in the past. It's just so hypocritical.
Well, it is very hypocritical, and it's you then bring it down to an Australian context. It said some of you might think. It might take you a while to get there, but you arrive at the... where were you? We can see the evidence of hatred, of the hatred boiling away inside the shooter's heart and mind, but we cannot now clinically dissect it. We can only ponder the consequences of hatred. It always ends in blood, in horror, always. It might take a while to get there, but arrive there, it will in the end. Some of you might think on that the next time you compare something like Safe Schools program to pedophile grooming... or draw a line from marriage equality to bestiality. And that is very true.
I mean, it wouldn't be out of the question to imagine the same sort of shooting being conducted by some sort of right-wing Christian nutter who just hates gay people because that's what he's being told by his Christian church.
Yeah.
And, instead of Allah Akbar or whatever shouting at the end, he might have been quoting parts of the Bible, Scott, and it's worthwhile doing that at this point. So,
yeah.
A right-wing Christian homophobic nutter might well have been calling out Leviticus chapter 18, verse 22. Homosexual acts are an abomination to God. Or maybe Leviticus 20, verse 13. If a man has sex with another, kill them both. Or women are not to wear men's clothing. This is Deuteronomy. Women are not to wear men's clothing and vice versa. It is an abomination unto the Lord. It was chapter 22, verse 5. And, a bit more pleasant stuff from the Bible. In the first book of Samuel, Saul sets an example for Christian parents that discover that they have a homosexual child. Try to kill the child and his or her lover. That's in chapter 20, verses 31 to 33. And... And of course, Paul in the Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 to 10, he lists 10 things that will keep you out of heaven, including homosexuality and being effeminate. So, Christian people out there who are bemoaning that this could possibly happen, have a look at your own sacred text, which says that these things should happen. You know, Scott, the amazing thing is it doesn't happen more often. That's what is truly amazing with all of the mad indoctrination by the Islamic faith and the Christian faith. It is amazing that people are not slaughtering homosexuals and transgender and left, right and centre.
It is amazing that it doesn't happen. It is also where we should be thankful for small mercies in that they... You know, the United States is actually quite a secular country, you know. You've got these idiots that are out there saying, you know, we should have the laws based on God's law and that sort of stuff. Mm. But their parliament, their Congress doesn't act like that, you know. And we really should be thankful for that, because otherwise you could see something like Orlando happening more often. Mm. And... happening the way that Islamic cleric said it should happen, in that he was talking about having homosexuals put to death by the state.
Yeah, it's weird. It's kind of that whole freedom of religion in the Constitution also means that it's totally unregulated. So in the UK, they've got, you know, the Church of England as the sort of government church, and it's all very low-key. But there's also an argument that because of the Constitution in the US, that the religion can't be touched, that it becomes so unregulated that these evil preachers can do whatever they like, and the state can't touch them. So it sort of works both ways, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
The Iron Fist, the Velvet Glove, and the 12th Man are all members of the Secular Party. There may be other contributors to the show who are also members. That does not mean that every opinion given on this show is policy of the Secular Party. To find out what is policy, go to the website of the Secular Party. And while you're there, think about joining and signing up, because we need more secularists in this world. Thanks. I got a link to an article, Six Things Americans Should Know About Mass Shootings. And number one is, more guns don't make you safer. And, of course, there's just some amazing statistics about the number of mass shootings by country. And the US is just so far ahead.
Number of mass shooting by countries. The United States has 66% of the casualties.
They've got double the number of mass shootings, more than any of the other 24 countries combined in this 30-year period. Has it reached the point that Americans are going to want to just leave that country and, you know, like educated American with unique skills who could move to a country like Canada or Australia, you'd have to start thinking about it, wouldn't you?
You would have to start thinking about it for sure. I mean, like, let's leave aside all the other good reasons to leave America, such as, you know, their appalling healthcare system and, you know, the fact that their government gets involved in whatever war it can abroad. Mm. And you then think to yourself, well, you know... You then start to think to yourself, should we just leave this place and just leave it to the gun nutters?
You know, if Australia can get its act into gear and pass some marriage equality laws, then You could make a really good pitch to the really best and brightest of the LGBTIQ community in the US and say, well, if you've got skills we need and you fit our visa requirements, you should think about coming here. And
exactly.
In the same way that America picked up, you know, all the brightest minds of Europe after the war, you know, the rest of the world could start picking off American brain power with this sort of thing happening as often as it does.
And that really is going to start to weigh on them, I would have thought.
Scott, Muslim leaders around the world condemned the massacre.
Not from the Middle East, though, did they?
Well, no, they did. I've got a link to an article here where various leaders of various Muslim leaders expressed condemnation of the terrorist attack. Pretty much all of them are along those lines, and none of them really say it's terrible that you know, gay men were picked on. It's more they'll just take the line it was a terrorist thing and condemn it for that reason. So Afghanistan, Bahrain, Bangladesh, Egypt, Kuwait, Indonesia, Iran, Pakistan, Scott. Here's the ironic
Pakistan
part.
How
much have we done on Pakistan and how uncivilized that country is? And
yeah,
here was their president said, you know, deeply saddened, blah, blah, blah. This is against every principle of pluralism, tolerance, and humanity that we have been striving for. That's the Prime Minister of Pakistan. Has been striving for pluralism, tolerance, and humanity. We've done a few stories on terrible things happening there.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah. Qatar has condemned the attacks, reiterate its condemnation of all forms of violence and terrorism. We had a bit of a Qatar story, Scott. You've got it there in front of you.
I do have the Qatar story, yes. Hmm. Would you like me to go into it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. 22-year-old Dutch woman is being held in Qatar on suspicion of adultery after she said she was raped while on holiday there, her lawyer and Dutch media said. The situation is this 22-year-old girl went out in a hotel bar where it was legal to drink. She had a drink and then woke up in a apartment, presumably belonging to this bloke, and then she realised she'd been raped. So she went and did what any good girl would do in the West. She went to the local cops. The cops then placed her under arrest, and she's being held on suspicion of adultery.
Yes.
Now, I had to read this twice because it didn't make any sense to me until, you know, you got to understand it's Qatar. Yes. You know, it's amazing how backward they are.
Yep. Yep. Mm. So, yes, so the likes of Qatar, when they offer their condemnation of the violence in America, like, why would we listen to a word they say when they're locking up women who have been raped?
Yeah.
For goodness sake. And Saudi Arabia, we pray for the recovery and healing of all those injured in the attack, and we will continue to work with the United States, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, in Saudi Arabia, another article says, LGBT rights in Saudi Arabia are already some of the least progressive in the world, but according to a new report, they might be taking a step even further back. Saudi newspaper Oraz reported that prosecutors are planning to push for the death penalty against LGBT citizens they find living openly on social media. So, previously engaging in homosexual activity or wearing clothing that does not correspond to genitalia is perceived to be on the rise in the country. more than 50 cases of cross-dressing men and 35 cases of sodomy have been reported in the last 6 months in Saudi Arabia. So while the death penalty is already legal for crimes related to non-traditional sexuality and sexual identity, you now run the risk of being executed just for coming out on social media in Saudi Arabia. And they're trying to tell they're trying to say that they're sorry that 49 people got slaughtered in a gay nightclub in Orlando. Like, given what they're doing in their own country, they're clapping their hands and they're happy about it. And
yeah, exactly. You know, it really is incredible hypocrisy. You know, I come back to the title of that article. Where was it? Orlando shooting, thoughts and prayers from hypocrites do nothing to help.
No. Oh, prayers are what got us into this mess in the first place.
Exactly, yeah.
Scott, quick quiz for you.
Yes.
Essential report came out, and this time it had Labor ahead 51 to Liberals 49, but for the last month it's just been, you know, 49-51, 50-50, and 51-49. It's, you know. But they asked the question, do you approve or disapprove of the changes to superannuation made in the budget?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you reckon the total approval and disapproval would be?
Disapproval's probably 40-50%. Approves probably 30-40%, and the balance being unsure.
No, a very strong approval rating. 47.
There was there?
47% approve the changes, 22% disapprove. Mm. But here's the really, really interesting statistic on this one, Scott.
Yeah.
Who would you have imagined would be more in favour of the changes, a Labor voter or a Liberal voter?
I would have thought it would be a Liberal voter would be more in favour of the changes.
Oh, okay. Well, see, I thought Liberals would be against it because they're more likely to be rich and have a big superannuation account and not want theirs affected. But
there's been those reports from the backbench saying that the money's dried up and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But I think that's concentrated in a group of a cartel, as it were, of Liberal Party donors.
Right. Well, anyway, amongst Liberal National voters, 57% approve of the superannuation changes and only 20% disapprove. Labor voters, 48% approve, 24% disapprove. So it's interesting that the workers are actually... I would have thought they'd be more in favour of superannuation that effectively hits the rich. But there you go. It's a Liberal Party policy, so I guess the Liberals voters say that they like their Liberal Party policy. But I thought that was an interesting statistic. So
it is interesting, especially considering the government and the ALP are almost on a par when it comes to superannuation.
Hmm.
You know, there's certainly an argument about retrospectivity that the Labor Party is putting out there reasonably strongly, but... I would have thought that it's actually been handled quite well by the government and that, frankly, I think Turnbull should be holding his head up, you know, at that point.
Yep, I think so. Scott, are you in the habit of putting bleach in your cordial?
No, I'm not. But if I was a student of the Connect program, maybe I would. I couldn't believe that when you sent that to me,
dear listener. We've previously mentioned, the religious instruction classes in our state schools often used Connect materials. So if you've got a Scripture Union people doing it, they'll probably be using the Connect materials from YouthWorks, and it's abominable material. And Fairness in Religions in Schools has been going through some of the stuff and highlighted one of the exercises that these volunteer Bible bashers will conduct with the children in a primary school, And so this is the instructions, and it talks about the materials and what to do in this particular class that a volunteer is going to run. You'll need to have two clear glasses / jars, water, cordial, and bleach. Discuss with the students how heaven is a place of perfection and no corruption, / pure water, /. And there is no place for sin, / cordial, /, in heaven. Whether it's a little sin, add a little cordial, or a lot of sin, add more cordial. Heaven would no longer be pure. It is now cordial. We are sinful and therefore can't be in heaven. But Jesus died in our place to take away our sin. At this point, mix in the bleach so we can be forgiven. Then it says, hopefully the colour of the cordial will have gone and you'll be left with a slightly cloudy but white clear glass.
The best
part about this, the best outcome is that a kid might drink some bleach. But like, to just, you know, you start full of sin, you are a bad, sinful thing, and it was Jesus, the son of the guy who created you, but is also the same thing in conjunction with the Holy Spirit, and you were all going to happen anyway, died on a cross, and that somehow wipes away the original sin. Like, it is just such a load of codswallop. So besides potentially poisoning kids physically,
yes,
the actual poisoning of a kid's soul by saying you were born as sinful is just outrageous.
It is outrageous, and it is absolutely ridiculous that governments have allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
And this is governments of both stripes have sat by and let it happen.
It's happening in our government schools, which should be secular places. You shouldn't even be allowed to do this in a religious school. Like, this sort of indoctrination of kids just shouldn't be allowed.
It's crazy.
So there we go. If you don't already, hop onto Facebook and follow not only the Secular Party, but also Queensland Parents for Secular State Schools, and also Fairness in Religions in Schools, and you'll see other stuff like that, which is mind-boggling, and that's the stuff that keeps me going. Scott, there you go. That's motivated me for another 4 weeks, just that article alone. of all the stuff that we go through in these podcasts, it's that where they're getting the kids that really gets to me.
Yeah, it really should get to you too. It's absolutely insane that anyone can go out there and preach that garbage.
Mm. But Scott, it's good to know that around Australia there are little groups bobbing up here and there doing their little bit. And I got contacted by a guy from the Bega Valley Atheists Association.
Yep.
And they're running a campaign where they're going to put some ads in the paper highlighting the coming census and encouraging people to put no religion, if in fact that's what they are. So they're looking to raise some money so they can afford to put some ads in the paper.
Yep.
And I said, I'm not so sure about your timing. Like, when do you get a bit sort of confused with the election? And he said, well, people buy a lot more newspapers around election time, so you actually reach more people. So,
right, okay.
That was his theory. So, dear listener, if you've got any spare money, send it to the Secular Party first, and then if you've got a lot of spare money, send some to the Bega Valley Atheists.
Yes, yeah. Bega Valley Atheists could do with a little bit of help.
Hmm. But it's nice to see. And actually, what do you guys do otherwise? And he said, they actually do sort of community work. Like, once a month, they will go out and do some sort of community work around the area. And I said, that's a really good thing to do, because, you know, the advantage that the religious groups have is that they get people together and they have a social time together. And that's,
yes,
you know, lots of people are sort of social Catholics or social Anglicans, not because they believe in the stuff, but they like the outing and to go and meet with other people in a social setting. And In the atheist world, you've got Sunday Assembly, which is a similar sort of thing where people get together and assemble and they have a speaker and they sing some, you know, non-religious songs. So that's that. Also, you know, I actually like our meeting, Scott, with the meetup group once a month, just as a social thing. Like, we don't really get a lot done in those meetings, but it's just nice to catch up with like-minded people who think the same and have a chat about stuff and a cup of coffee afterwards. Like, the social
part of that. It really is very good. And while I hope that they never actually do go belly up, if they ever do, I would like to keep it going.
yeah. Okay, article from the Sydney Morning Herald about Specsavers. And this is interesting, because I saw this ad on TV and wondered what was going on there. So there's an entrepreneur who's helping to bankroll Nick Xenophon's fledgling political party, and he's launched a television ad campaign which is lambasting the coalition for handing $35 million contract to supply spectacles to the Defence Force personnel to Specsavers. And this guy is making the point that Specsavers is domiciled in the low-tax island of Guernsey. So we've spoken in the past about these companies that are tax-dodging, these multinational companies not paying tax anywhere. And our own Defence Force is dealing with a group like that and spending $35 million with them, profits to go offshore, when there's other groups, perhaps the optical superstore chain, owned by this entrepreneur. So that's interesting. It's a little sideline. So the guy who's complaining about the Specsavers one is their opposition, the optical superstore. But provided that's all disclosed, I'm okay with that. And at least, presumably, he's domiciled in Australia and will pay Australian tax on the profits from the contract, the Defence Force. So, appalling that the government is using a tax dodger.
Well, it is appalling that they're using a tax dodger. I know we've signed agreements and that sort of stuff abroad that say you've got to go with the lowest cost provider and that sort of stuff. But surely, you know, some of these agreements should be renegotiated to say that that's fine, but in the case of a tax-dodging client, then no, we won't use them.
What are you saying? We might be compelled by some trade agreement?
Well, I have read, I don't know if we are in this one in particular, but I have read before that we have signed trade agreements that do compel us to buy from the lowest cost provider. And Specsavers might be the lowest cost provider. But when you take into account their tax dodgers, it really does put a whole new...
I don't think that would be the case here, because surely we wouldn't have a trade agreement with the island, the low-tax island of Guernsey. But
well, Guernsey comes under British territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works. Anyway, that wasn't mentioned here, but who knows? Anyway, just on its own, just it sounds to me like we've just kissed away several million dollars of tax revenue to that group. So these are the things, eh? Like, you would never have known. Like, if you'd needed a pair of glasses, Specsavers, you wouldn't have thought twice about that they might be an overseas company.
You wouldn't know that they were an overseas company that was domiciled in Guernsey.
Got to have your wits about you if you're going to be an ethical consumer.
Yes.
Briefly, Scott, Victoria, with a parliamentary report has come in recommending voluntary euthanasia laws.
Yes, and well done, Victoria. Well done indeed. It really is well and truly overdue, and it is great that a state like Victoria has gone ahead with this.
Well, the parliamentary committee has recommended the reforms, and the government's got 6 months to respond. And
it was an all-party committee too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. So it was chaired by Liberal, Edward O'Donoghue, who recommended the choice should be given to adults with decision-making capacity suffering from a serious terminal condition and at the end of their lives. The proposal prohibits... This is interesting, Scott. So this is all proposed legislation, but the proposal prohibits suicide tourism by limiting the regime to Victorian residents.
Really?
Yes. That's very interesting. So a Queenslander just thinking, okay, I've had enough. I'll head to Victoria. Yeah, not good enough. There'll be some sort of residential requirement.
Oh, really?
Very interesting, yeah. It will exclude dementia patients and those suffering from mental health conditions. Requests must be entirely voluntary, come from the patient directly. It must be approved by two doctors. Interestingly, Premier Daniel Andrews suggested the recent loss of his father after a long battle with cancer had informed his thinking on the issue. And my father, Scott, had a pretty ugly last few days. And and that certainly, I had this view anyway, but it just reinforces it. So when you see it happening, you it means a lot more to you.
And look, that's very true. My mother, she wanted to fight, but and she fought with every fibre of her being right up to the very end. But after seeing that, I came away and decided that no, if my time ever came like that, I would I'd ask the doctor, you know, what pills do I take, and should I wash them down with a brandy?
Yeah. Yeah. Just as a little side note on this committee that made the recommendation, there were some dissenters. There was a Liberal and a Labor dissenter. They raised the slippery slope argument.
Yeah, they always raise the slippery slope argument, yes. Don't they?
And also, separate to that, Catholic Episcopal Vicar for Life, Marriage and Family, Father Tony Kerrin. I mean, this is one of my hobby horses again, Scott, but this, you just can't be a Catholic vicar anymore. You've got to be part of some sort of subgroup within the church.
Yes.
This is the Catholic Episcopal Vicar for Life, Marriage and Family, Father Tony Kerrin said, quote, "The misguided but sincere pleas for assisted suicide seem only to address the fear of pain," end quote. Well, isn't the fear of pain good enough? Like,
I would have thought that that would be enough of anyone to actually say, yeah, okay, the old boy's suffered enough, let's help him along the way.
Yes.
You know, you don't... And I've said this many, many times, you don't leave an animal in pain.
Yes.
You know, it's like the Dying with Dignity people up here in Queensland. They had an excellent bumper sticker. It said, "I deserve to die like a dog."
Yeah. When has anybody looked at a suffering dog and gone, well, it's only pain? Like,
exactly.
But yeah. The Catholic Episcopal Vicar for Life, Marriage and Family, Father Tony Kerrin, "The misguided but sincere pleas for assisted suicide seem only to address the fear of pain." Oh, for goodness sake.
That's exactly why anyone wants to go, you know, because of the pain.
See, one good reason just isn't enough for the Catholic Church.
No, it's not. It really isn't. It's... anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Are you enjoying the show and would you like to help out? There's a few easy things you can do. You can like us on Facebook and you can go into iTunes and leave a positive review. That would be much appreciated. Also, if you're really keen, you could donate to us via Patreon. For details on how to do all this, visit our website. Thanks for your support. And now, back to the podcast. Zipping around from topic to topic here, dear listener, you know, I do try and get these into some sort of order, but it's been a big week, and we've really cobbled this bit together at the last minute. So, you know, enjoy the ride as we zip around issues and the world. But on this one, we're back with the John Menadue blog, and he talks about Australia and its relationships with US and China. And You know, well, the problem is at the moment, Scott, is that America just says jump and we say how high. And I'm sick of it. And I think all of Australians are as well. Like, so we just have to, you know, we should have been talking America out of entering Iraq rather than just nodding our heads.
We should have been, yes. Like
A true friend.
If we were a true friend would say to them, don't do this.
Yes. So
yes.
A true friend should have said, this is not the right move, don't do it. But we just like a lapdog, you know, running along behind, said, yep, go for it. So
exactly.
So this is an article by John Menadue, and he's quoting the US Studies Center at Sydney University, which produced a study which showed 8 out of 10 Australians were only mildly concerned about the fact that China already dominates Asia, and they don't think China would go to war with the USA, that they thought USA had peaked and was on the way out. And this guy from the US Studies Center thought that that was very worrying and very naive. And John Menadue has replied by saying, well, who's being naive? Australians need to understand that American actions in the regions will be directed solely towards the promotion of perceived US interests and will take no account of Australian interests. I mean, that's true. They will do what's
good for.
So far, the alliance has got us into wars we should have stayed out of, but not protected us against anyone or anything. He makes the point, there's no advantage in being anti-American, but nor is it in our interest to take the view that we must not upset the Americans by putting our interests before theirs. We can be friends without supporting the desire of conservative forces in the USA who believe in America's manifest destiny to have its way in the world. So, there we go. That's a good article for anyone who's sick of our sort of subservience in that relationship.
Yeah, it is a very good article.
Dear listener, later this evening, this is Wednesday that we're recording, and after I've finished this recording with Scott, I'm going to jump in the car, head into the valley, and I'm going to be interviewed on 4ZZZ on a program called Queer Radio. Have you ever heard, have you ever listened to it, Scott?
I have listened to it on a couple of occasions, and I will be tuning in tonight, yes.
Yeah, so I, it'll be on like a podcast type thing, so, you know, if you, well, you won't have listened to this in time, but, so if you missed it, you should be able to get on, and I believe I'm going to be allowed about 10 minutes to sort of give a bit of a spruik as to what we're all about. And Scott, last week we talked about the gender identity issue in New York, where businesses had to allow for 31 gender identities,
yes,
and they could be prosecuted if they didn't. And after that, we got a message from Janelle, who gave us a link to another list. And dear listener, this is another list of genders. And would you believe that there are 115 different genders on this list with an explanation? So thank you, Janelle. Fantastic for that. And yeah. Scott,
so it's going to take us a little while to get through it, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not going to go. We're not going to go through all of them, but. I'm going to take it with me to this interview, and like if there's 30 seconds at the end, I might question the guy in charge of the program and just see how good he is with his queer gender sort of knowledge. So I've picked out a few here that just that interested me. So we've got Adam as gender, which is a gender which refuses to be categorized. There's an aerogender, a gender that is influenced by your surroundings. That's interesting. An amare gender is a gender that changes depending on who you're in love with. Ambigender, defined as having the feeling of two genders simultaneously without fluctuation, meaning to reflect the concept of being ambidextrous, but with gender. Apagender, a feeling of apathy towards one's gender, which leads to them not looking any further into it. here's us, Scott. Cisgender, the feeling of being the gender you were assigned at birth. Yes. All the time. We made the list.
We did make the list, yes.
Yep. Absconsugender, a gender where you know what it isn't, but not what it is. The gender is hiding itself from you. That would be tricky.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gender punk, a gender identity that actively resists gender norms. and the last one, vapogender, a gender that sort of feels like smoke, can be seen on a shallow level, but once you go deeper, it disappears and you are left with no gender and only tiny wisps of what you thought it was. So there's 131 different genders, and God, there's people in just a whole range of... My life is so simple, Scott. Like,
well, yeah, that's the thing that I read when I opened it up and saw that there were 115 of them. I thought, oh God, I'm not going to read them all. And I honestly believed before that article last week where you said there were 31 genders.
Yep.
I thought there would be three, male, female, intersex, and then no. But, you know, to find out there's 115 of them, that's really almost frightening.
Mm. It must be a very confusing life to lead, or I guess people deal with it, but
well, gosh. Yeah, I mean, and they deal with it, and they have hate thrown at them by the Christians.
Yeah. So life as a cisgender, white, heterosexual male is so easy in comparison, so...
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. I'll put that one in a different pile of my papers to take with me, and I might question my questioner with that and see how we go. Scott, Indian miracle buster stuck in Finland. And
yeah, this was good, wasn't it?
Oh, well, it's sad, Scott.
It was sad. It was sad about that he's now stuck in Finland when he should be at home with his family.
Yeah.
But... it was good that, you know, the story of him and his engineer mate that went back to find out why there was dripping water from the statue's feet.
Yeah, we'll tell that one. So this guy's role was he used to go around to, he's Indian, and he would go around to villages. And, of course, in India, they're highly susceptible to all sorts of mysterious miracle-type feats happening in villages, and a lot of them by just con artists and snake oil salesmen. And he would demonstrate to the people how they were being conned and how the tricks were being done. And then when television came along, he became quite a famous television personality, going around and debunking these things. And... you can see him on YouTube, and there's an interesting one where he's being interviewed, and this Hindu fakir declared on live television that he could kill anybody with tantric chanting. So this guy, Edamaraku, said, that's just complete nonsense. You can't kill anybody just by tantric chanting. And in fact, you're welcome to kill me now. Like, start chanting. And this guy said, all right, I will. I'll kill you with my tantric chanting. And so the channel cancelled all subsequent programming, and this guy started chanting on the spot. But as the hours passed, a note of desperation crept into his raspy mantras. And for his part, Edamaraku, president of the Indian Rationalist Association, showed no sign of discomfort, let alone death. He merely chortled his way through this unconventional and unsuccessful attempt on his life. And you can see that on YouTube. And he is chortling and bemused, and he's just, come on, kill me with your chanting. And and so anyway, but he's he was doing that well. But in 2012, he made a mistake, Scott. And... that's when he took on religion.
So, that's when he took on organized religion, yes.
So there was a statue of Christ, naturally, nailed to a cross. And there would be water was dripping from the toes of Christ on this statue. And people gathered around and said, it's a miracle. Like, how is this water appearing on the toe of Jesus? And people would go, and some people would even drink from this steady drip of water from the statue. So Ed America goes, he was challenged to investigate, and he went to the site with an engineer friend and traced the source of the drip backwards. And there was moisture on the wall that the statue was mounted on, which seemed to come from an overflowing drain, which was in turn fed by a pipe that issued from a nearby toilet. The miracle was simply bad plumbing.
Exactly. You know. So
he presents that as the solution in a television debate with representatives of the Catholic lobby, and a mob appears outside, and they're wanting to do him physical harm. And anyway, people are complaining that he has blasphemed because he has insulted and made fun of the church. And there's a section in an act which says it's an offence to make deliberate and malicious speech insulting to religion, punishable with up to 3 years in prison. So he left the country to do some, just escape the heat a bit, and went to Finland where he had friends. And is, while he was away, one of his colleagues was murdered, and he's convinced if he goes back, he will be thrown in jail and or murdered. And so he can't return to India. Like, and his family is in India, and he's living a very lonely life in Finland as a result. It's a really sad story.
Yeah, that is sad for sure. I mean, it was very amusing when I was reading about how he was going around debunking all the miracles.
Yes.
But it is the bottom line of it is, ladies and gentlemen, is that he has been run out of town by religionist idiots.
Mm.
And he's been run out of his own country now, and he has to live abroad.
Mm. Yeah, it's, yeah. And just, you know, in a country so foreign to him, and, oh, it's a sad story, but...
it is a sad story, for sure.
Yeah. Scott, we've got a few items left, but I'm conscious that we are hitting our normal one-hour mark, so I'm going to hold over the others until the end, and I
just
have to get ready...
Just before we go, is the Richard Di Natale stands by the preference Fred Nile candidate above a Liberal.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, I won't keep you very long. It is in the in Tanya Plibersek's seat of Sydney, and it is a... Well, it's a fight between Tanya Plibersek and the Greens. It'll probably go back to Tanya Plibersek. But the point about this article is that Di Natale was asked about, why are you preferencing this Reverend Fred Nile candidate ahead of the Liberal? And his argument was that the Liberal was might have been gay, but he was standing up for the coalition's policy on a plebiscite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's preferencing Fred Nile above a gay Aboriginal Liberal candidate.
Exactly.
Yeah. Given that they're down at 9 and 10, it doesn't really, you know...
No, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter, but then because they are so low down, it wouldn't have mattered if they'd put the Fred Nile candidate last and the Liberal ahead of the Fred Nile candidate.
Good point, yes.
Yeah.
So there we go. All right, Scott, well... dear listener, thank you. Join us again next week. Now, at the moment, good night from the Iron Fist.
And it's good night from the Velvet Glove. Bye now.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast, and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. like grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It just, it'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation, so you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners, and that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.